This is Studio 360, and I am not Kurt Anderson. I'm Hilton Owls, I swear. I got to know Thelma Golden more than 20 years ago when I worked on the catalog for an exhibition called Black Male, Representations of Masculinity in Contemporary Art. Thelma was the curator of that Whitney Museum show, and it was a game changer for how people talked about race and art. Some years later, her exhibition Freestyle turned out to be just as influential. She's not the kind of curator who just hangs art. She uses it to help us see the world in new ways. Thelma Golden is now the director and chief curator of the Studio Museum, the Harlem institution that has been presenting artists of color for 50 years. Thelma, thanks for stopping by Studio 360.
Hilton, thank you.
Tell me something about the Studio Museum. What are the goals, and how did the museum come about?
The Studio Museum in Harlem was founded in 1968. And when the museum was founded, it was with the very important premise that there should be a museum devoted to presenting the work of black artists.
Mm-hmm.
The founders of the museum were brilliant because in our name, they created the mission.
Mm-hmm.
So the studio represents the fact that the museum has always had an artist-in-residence program, always had artists working in the building, and have always been committed to living artists and their process.
I see.
Museum, of course, was the real challenge to the art world, that
mm-hmm.
the Studio Museum was saying, we are going to create a museum to create and reinvent and re-envision the canon to include the work of artists of African descent. And Harlem was a way to signal that this institution would be rooted in this community, which, of course, was the home of the Harlem Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1968, when we were founded, a community that was reinventing itself. So that's what the museum was and
mm-hmm.
was founded, but it's also what we remain, committed to artists, committed to, you know, radical presentation
yes.
in a museum,
yes.
and committed to being in and of Harlem.
And how did you find your way back to Harlem? I know your father is a native of Harlem.
My grandparents came to Harlem in the early decade of the century from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
They married in Harlem, and then my father was born there. He was raised by his mother. My paternal grandfather passed away, but my paternal grandmother brought her mother from Jamaica. So my father was raised by these two incredible women
mm-hmm.
and was educated in Harlem, the public schools of Harlem, then went to City College, but he is a real son of Harlem,
mm-hmm.
loved Harlem. He and my mother married in the early 60s and moved to Southeast Queens. Coming into Manhattan, as we did often, my father, though an incredibly thrifty man,
mm-hmm.
he would take the then Triborough, now RFK Bridge, though it had a toll, because it meant we got off on 125th Street. And
wow.
so that every trip into Manhattan would include a ride through Harlem. And so I grew up sort of knowing the neighborhood.
Tell me about your father's business before he retired.
My father was a lawyer, but worked. His business was as an insurance broker, property
mm-hmm.
and casualty insurance broker. And through much of my adolescence, I worked for my father in
mm-hmm.
his office. And it was probably best for his clients not to know that it was his 16-year-old or 15-year-old daughter answering the telephone.
Yes.
Though it was a solo business, his name was Arthur Golden. It was called Golden and Golden Insurance. And so I would pick up the phone and I'd say, Golden and Golden Insurance, how may I help you? And I was very, very good at it. My father loved the television show Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And he instilled that in me. We watched that together. And it was an example of
mm-hmm.
a professional woman, a fully actualized professional woman.
On her own, doing it on her own.
On her own, doing it on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that was a gift that he gave me. But it was also from that that I gained my sense of, you know, what this professionalism might sound or look like. So
mm-hmm.
really, when I answered the phone, it was essentially in a Mary Tyler Moore voice. That's what I was trying to do most of the time.
That's very funny. And one of the things that I know was very important for your parents was to expose you and your brother to a great deal of cultural life in the city. So when you're talking about Harlem here, I hear that they exposed you to living history.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, my parents were deeply invested in culture, deeply invested in African-American culture. They love music. They love the theater. They love literature. So many of the pieces of what have become my life.
Yes.
were there.
Were there. Mm-hmm.
And my parents didn't censor. I mean, I saw many things that clearly I would not have understood fully. But what I understood was the feeling of it.
That's right.
So all of my fantasies as a young person of what being an intellectual, cultural producer could be came from these encounters, these real encounters, you know, the television encounters. You know, when I think of the influence that stands with me, it was Roxy Roker's portrayal of Helen Willis on The Jeffersons.
That's right.
Do you remember Helen Willis?
Yes, I do.
Do you remember that apartment?
Yes.
The dark walls,
yes.
The African sculpture.
Yes.
Do you remember the way in which they were always going off to the theater, off to Lincoln Center
yes.
as they came down?
That's right.
Right? To Louise and George's on the way?
Yes.
Those are the things that, you know, for me gave me this sense of what would be possible.
That's really amazing. So I wanted to ask you, what was it about museums that appealed to you? What made you see the museum as a place you could contribute to?
I always loved museums. Mm-hmm. I loved museums from the time I went to museums for field trips as a child in school. And also, at the point that my parents allowed me to begin to take the subway by myself. Now, you know, remember, this is, you know, late 70s, 80s New York
yes.
City, right?
Yeah.
So taking the subway by yourself, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally could take the subway by myself, the places that were most welcoming, most accessible, most open, had most potential for me as a young person were museums. So I just spent hours and hours walking through museums, picking up every free brochure, buying postcards in the gift shop, reading wall labels. I would walk around museums and guards in museums,
yes.
primarily middle-aged African-American men, surprised but often sometimes thrilled to see me there walking on my own, would often point out things to me. And they were guides to me in those institutions. But it wasn't until I saw an article in The New York Times about Lowry Stokes Sims, who was a curator of 20th century art at the Metropolitan Museum, and I saw a picture of Lowry, that I then was able to fully understand and realize that there was someone who made
a person of color.
Well, and or
a woman
just
of color.
A woman of color, but also someone in general who made those choices.
Real person. Yes,
that
yes, yes.
Put those things
yes.
on the wall, right?
That's right?
That they didn't grow out of the walls themselves. That someone did that. That's when I decided that I wanted to be a curator. I wanted to work in museums. I wanted to work with artists and with works of art. I wanted to spend all of my life doing that.
Did you ever want to be an artist yourself?
I never wanted to be an artist, and I think it is because my experiences of viewing art were always for me combined of not just what I was seeing, but where and how I was seeing it, that I was immediately attracted to the idea of being involved with what it would mean to present work. So, no, I wasn't an artist. I had an amazing art teacher, and she, you know, taught art with the idea of just the joy of making. And I think certainly I have that, and I continue to have that, the joy of making. But never, ever, ever thought I might be an artist. I never imagined that would be possible.
When you became a curator on the staff at the Whitney Museum of Art, were you the first curator of color there?
I was, to all recorded history. Now, I've always wanted and hoped that somebody would come forward and say that, no, you weren't. You are wrong.
Right.
You know, but actually, I was. And I, it's a role.
This is not, I'm not putting the institution down
no,
at
that's
all.
No, that was yeah. the world and the museum world. And so I was very proud when I got a job in 1991 at the Whitney. I felt an incredible amount of responsibility. You know, I walked in that door every day with the sense of what it meant. I knew that I was existing with an incredible amount of privilege in that position, and that I had to use that privilege to get work done.
And did it, you did. You got blackmail done. It was a groundbreaking show. How did that idea for that show come to you?
The exhibition came out of my desire to make an exhibition that looked at the ways in which contemporary artists had looked at images of black masculinity, particularly through the media, from the late 60s to the present. But how the show really happened really has to do with the fact that David Ross, who was director of the Whitney at that time, who hired me as a curator, encouraged what became the curatorial vision in me that made that show possible.
Right.
You know, another great inspiration for me was Dorothy Miller, you know, mm-hmm. the pioneering curator who'd worked at the Museum of Modern Art.
Mm-hmm.
And as a curator, I knew I wanted to have that kind of voice, the voice of a curator who looks at their moment and makes exhibitions that positions artists and their artworks as a way to speak about it.
Right.
And Blackmail, that exhibition came out of artists. It came out of the fact that I was sort of raised as a curator by a fierce group of artists.
Yes.
You know, those artists who really demanded of me that I understand what their work was about and as a curator begin to create the spaces that it could occupy.
What's changed for black artists since the late 80s when you started your career?
A lot has changed in the art world since the late 80s. You know, I can remember, as I'm sure you do, in those days, the way in which we thought about presentation, the way in which we thought about representation was sort of conditioned by every event being singular, right? Because not so much happened.
Right.
So that each
of this is the black show.
Right.
This is, yes.
So things were seen as singular, and that had been going on for many years even before that. I think what's changed now is this incredibly wider field in which black art is presented. Now, I will be the first one to say that I still want more. I want to see more. But I think what has changed most significantly is just the widening and the opening of the space.
Mm-hmm.
It is this amazingly wide open feel.
Thelma Golden, thank you so much for joining us today at Studio 360. It's been a dream and a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thelma Golden is the director of the Studio Museum in Harlem. You can find out more about some of her exhibitions at studio360.org.